Are you boys ready to dive in?
Are you ready
You
to
know
party?
you can't spell pieces without pie.
It's true. That's actually how I remembered how to spell peace.
Of pie.
Piece of pie.
Indication.
What am I supposed to do with this? Eat it?
What?
Happy birthday to the ground.
What a song.
That is one of many fantastic songs on that soundtrack. Welcome back to Talking Backwards, a Twin Peaks podcast. Hegle der Motadem der Hater, Dave Jackson, and I am joined by Patrick Mahan.
Hegle Amotadem der Hater, Patrick Mahan.
And Tyler Mullins.
Hegle der
Oh, dear, no.
Hi.
All of us at the same time. Higle.
Omote
dem. Hitter.
Dave Jackson.
Chet Desmond.
It took a while, but little did people know that even after Fire Walk With Me, there was more to be found.
It's true.
We are back for the missing pieces, extended and deleted scenes from Fire Walk With Me, the Twin Peaks movie.
You want some Pat stats, guys?
I want the Pat stats.
No.
The official Pat stats.
You could have been anywhere in the world tonight, but you're here with us.
Pat stats.
Haul out your boy for some Pat stats. Stats. Stats.
I hate the Pat stats.
There were many rumors about these deleted scenes for many, many years. When the DVD got released for Fire Walk With Me, I believe the first release in 2000, I think fans thought maybe it would get released then, and it didn't.
There was a huge, I remember there was a huge campaign.
Yeah, probably. Probably petitions.
You know, everyone was like, release the Snyder Cut and all this stuff.
Release the Sweeney Cut. Mary Sweeney was the editor on Fire Walk With Me. Although David Lynch edited this. At least that's what it says in the credits. I believe it. And then in 2006 or 7, when they finally put out the first two seasons and did the gold box edition, maybe it would, you know, come out then. Or maybe it got a separate release. I'm not sure. Because I actually don't think Fire Walk With Me and Twin Peaks were released together until The Entire Mystery, which came out in 2014. And that is when this got released. Nobody ever saw these scenes until the summer of 2014. So they were just locked away somewhere.
Wild.
Yeah, there were just a lot of there was a lot it seemed like the company that funded the film, I believe, maybe were holding things up, and I don't know. I'm sure Lynch wasn't in a rush to I feel like for a long time he was just trying to kind of put Twin Peaks, you know, in the rearview mirror without revisiting it. So
like he kind of finished with.
Because there's a quote of his from around that time of the Fire Walk With Me DVD coming out. I'm sure someone asked him about it in an interview or something, but he said, like, Twin Peaks was as dead as a doornail. I wish he would have said dead as a doorknob, but that's that's beyond the point.
Hindsight is 20/20 on that.
Yeah. So fans were excited, as you can imagine, to finally get new footage from this time with so many of the original cast that weren't in Fire Walk With Me. You know, it had been rumored that David Lynch had ideas to do more after Fire Walk With Me, immediately after, and the trilogy was the rumor. And I feel like I read something where David Lynch sort of debunked that, but Robert Ingalls, who co-wrote Fire Walk With Me, had this quote from an interview that I'd like to read in its entirety. I think it's pretty fascinating. There's a draft of Fire Walk With Me that's a 3.5 hour movie. David and I talked about that. David wants what's on film to be what it is. Yeah, Dave Jackson. but an idea, he said, to go back and say they're from a planet of corn. talking about like Bob and the spirits. But we didn't do that. That was a part of an idea that we talked about. Working with David, none of these things became solid until they're shot. The shooting script of The Fire Walk With Me describes the bar scene as everybody's getting roasted and toasted. That's all it says. It's what David decides to do when they're shooting. He'll decide what it is. But there's an idea of a field of corn, and we would shoot it backwards so that Michael Ontkean, who plays Sheriff Truman, would have to drive a Jeep a mile and a half backwards. It's a pretty cool thought, and I think that's a part of where the corn came from. Wouldn't it be cool to see Michael have to drive his trooper backwards for that long? Now I just want to see this.
Let's make it.
I wanted to say, too, last week when we talked about the bulk of the movie, I praised Charlize's performance a few times. I wish I had praised it way more than I did. I know we were a bit exhausted for recording about, you know, 3 hours. And much like I said during the original series that I would have thrown all the Emmys at Leland, I mean, I know that the film didn't do well, but I think her performance was Oscar-worthy. I don't know if that's crazy. She did get nominated for Best Actress at the Saturn Awards and the Independent Spirit Awards, so it was nice that she got some recognition. I feel like I should have praised it way more than I did. I found a quote, actually, from Grace Zabriskie, who said about Cheryl Lee that she gave everything she had and more than she could afford to give, and that she spent years coming back from.
I don't doubt that at all. You have to go somewhere to do what she was doing in that film. I feel like I also didn't praise enough sections because I was just so. I don't know why, but I feel like I expected it to be a different kind of movie.
Well, that's what I mean. I kind of touched on that. That's what I thought in my first watch. I thought it was going to be just
a movie. Yeah.
I don't know what I thought.
Honestly, Fire Walk With Me kind of feels like its own collection of missing pieces. It feels like a lot of scenes and a lot of situations that were supposed to go somewhere and just kind of got compiled into this one stream of experiences. And the missing pieces to me kind of functions the same way. It just doesn't have a running narrative in it.
But it's weird that it just, even watching it though, it just feels like it all just flows so well. I love the idea of just kind of watching just a series of vignettes. Just like, okay, like we're just moving.
Yep. It definitely moves in acts.
Yeah. And it definitely follows at least structure of how, you know, you start with the scenes of Desmond and Stanley, you know, you start there and then you get to the Laura Palmer stuff, and it kind of flows in mostly the same order as how we see it in Fire Walk With Me.
I think what I was expecting was a little more of the kind of going back and forth, like show you something, don't really explain it, and come back to it and make it connect. But instead it was, you would get something and then you're done with it. And we're moving on to the next bit. And I think that's what made it such a confusing experience for me both times that I saw it. Cause like, I don't know. It's very much like, and I know I said this, I've beaten this horse to death already, but it's definitely a companion piece to the series, to season 1 and 2. It's not a standalone experience, and I think that's what I was expecting.
You didn't see Fire Walk With Me first, and then go buy the VHS of the series.
I did not.
I was also expecting that.
Guess I'll invest in some Blu-rays. So we start with this intro shot of Laura's picture in the high school, in the case, and it is a different picture. There are different pictures that were taken of her in this photo shoot, which doesn't surprise me. It surprises me that they decide to use different pictures of her. The smiles are slightly different.
It's eerily dissimilar. Because I saw it, and I felt like
we see all the versions of her smile later as it gets bigger, Joker-like, in that one scene when she's staring at the fan. It's just odd. You've seen the picture so much from the credits that you see the slight change, and it's weird.
It's kind of uncanny valley.
Yeah,
it's like this looks right, but
something
don't
is
know.
A little bit off.
Something's not quite right.
Yeah, but we just get this intro that explains that these are extended and deleted scenes from the movie.
What you are about to see.
Very long and drawn out. Here we go. Yeah. Now we start with this scene is called Desmond's M.O. Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm already confused.
this is not a morgue.
This is later described as Stanley's apartment. Sam Stanley live at a morgue?
I wouldn't put it past him.
I need this backstory.
It says his apartment. But Sam Stanley is not from Deer Meadow.
Yeah, why does he have a place here?
It seems like, yeah, they'd put him up in a hotel, you know, or lodging, but they wouldn't give him...
Or the local morgue.
Yeah, they wouldn't give him an apartment to set up a morgue.
Maybe the person naming the chapters was not familiar.
And this doesn't look like a morgue, and it doesn't look like an apartment. This looks like a shed.
No, it's like a hut on a frozen lake.
Well, let's say this. I don't know. I'm not looking at a map of Washington, so I'm unfamiliar with the area, and maybe you guys know, maybe you don't, and that's totally fine if you don't. They say he's... I don't know if Gordon in Fire Walk With Me says he lives in Spokane or he's from Spokane.
Spokane.
I'm pretty sure when they meet there at the airport with Lil, he says, Sam Stanley from Spokane, Washington.
Just about as east as you can go.
Is it north, though?
In Washington. I'd say it's just north of the equator of Washington.
Okay.
Equator of Washington.
I'm just trying to make sense
of
it.
Every state has an equator.
It is in line with Seattle, if that helps you at all.
Okay. It doesn't.
It's not. I wouldn't say it's north. It's definitely north of the country.
So if we want to reference...
Or in the country.
If we want to reference what the writer on Pop Apostle wrote about the scene with Cooper and Sam, it says it looks like some kind of workshop, but the script itself describes it as Sam's apartment. Why does he have this pool with an electric mixer in his apartment?
And what's in it?
Yeah, what is going on? I love the way Cooper looks at it, too. Like, just like, what?
Yeah.
This is interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, and without these, you never see Cooper interact with these agents.
Yeah.
Either one of them.
You may not remember this. In the pilot episode, Cooper, when they have Laura's body, when I mentioned the room with the electricity acting weird, or the light acting weird, someone comes in and... I believe Cooper tells... I could be misremembering all this completely. But all I remember is Cooper says to someone to give this to Albert's team, don't give it to Sam. He doesn't say Sam Stanley, but he says, don't give it to Sam.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. When you watch the pilot, it's just like, what? Sam?
Yeah. Well, you get so many names in the pilot that it's...
You do, yeah.
There are some you can just write off. Yeah, it's... It's, for the most part, it seems like the same scene from the movie.
Yeah, I don't know what was different about...
I think it's a little more of the establishing shot of the exterior for them to come out of. And it might even be at a different angle. But it very much just the same scene. They come out and mention that they've been working so long that it's night now. And instead of sleeping, they're going to...
Maybe that's Lynch messing with us, being like, these are missing pieces. The very first thing we show, this was in the movie. Like, maybe that's it.
Or
did I crack
the piece
the code
there the whole time?
That might be it. Let's go to Haps.
Let's go to Haps. Let's say hello.
So this is an extended scene. Because we see parts of this. But I love this guy, Jack. He's talking, and he says the FBI hasn't been here since the 50s when Hap was running the place. What were they doing there? What case was happening?
What did Hap do?
Yeah, and then I believe Chet says something like, how's Hap, or something like that? And he's just like, oh, he's been dead. You know, or I think he just says he's dead. Almost like she's dead. And Chet's like, I'm sorry to hear that. And Jack goes, he didn't suffer. Good detail, Jack.
What that means.
That's a great, great detail, buddy.
And Brother Man's just working on a lamp in the background.
Oh, another Brother Man?
Yeah. There's a lot going on in this little corner of the world here.
Well, you also get like a homeless looking guy, big beard, similarly looking to the convenience store guy.
Yeah.
There's a very similarity there to me in that convenience store scene later with the spirits, with this guy sitting here in a chair. Mm-hmm. And
with a hand on his knee.
Hand on his knee. You're right. Like, so it, like, is there a connection to be made here?
I think there is. There's a lot of breadcrumbs, and this is like I was saying.
And the guy in the corner is working on a light bulb. It's electricity. Yeah. Like, I think, yes, there is.
What are you doing? I'm working on a light bulb.
I'm arbitrarily making flicker and light so I can make
how else would you? How else would you describe that?
I don't know.
And it took looking up for me to understand Jack's little thing about Irene. And he mentions her name is Irene. It is night. That's all you need to know.
Don't go any further with it.
Well, no good can come of it.
But then they do in the next scene when they're talking in the parking lot. She walks out and he says, good morning. Or Irene, good morning. And then it almost sounds like Sam wants to say something. But then he remembers what Jack said. And he's like, oh, wait a second. We shouldn't be talking to her. It's daylight.
Yeah, the thing there is that there is a song apparently called Good Night, Irene. That apparently this waitress would have heard a lot.
Good night, Irene.
So she hates the song.
It's like if your name is a celebrity's name, like Michael Bolton. Someone's like, oh, there's like no relation.
That guy is a major cinephile.
But yeah, it's this scene is mostly the same too. It's a static shot, just one angle, and it's the exact same dialogue. It's just shot a different way. The big mystery in this scene to me is that, and I noticed it in the movie too, but the guy's badge says, say hello to Jack, but the hello is X'd out and it says goodbye above it. Why?
Hello, goodbye?
Goodbye. Why do it?
He's not good with goodbyes?
We talked about this during the movie thing, but it's still like just, it's so glaring.
I would do the same thing.
Is he related to Jack, the monkey, from What Did Jack Do?
I think this is the monkey in man shapes.
Thank you, Dave. I needed that connection. I need more connections to that. Mm. I think there's a lot of connections to that.
That's such a loose connection.
And Jeffrey's
kind of like
also
the loose connection in the light bulb that's being worked on.
Oh, a lot of loose connections. And a lot of loose ends.
Ooh.
He is using his arm.
Is there anything else of note in the scene outside of Haps? Because that's
the crying clown,
the neon light.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to make you think of OEJ's one-eyed Jack?
I mean, maybe. It just seems like none of the neon really works around anything to do with anybody that's being filmed for this show.
I mean, it's quickly established that this is, you know, a parallel universe of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, it's a polar opposite of Twin Peaks. So, of course, everything's sad and clown-like.
That makes sense, yeah.
Instead of joyful and welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And were there balloons inside?
There were. Birthday party.
Yeah, birthday party at Haps.
Which makes me wonder if Haps is short for happy. And maybe clowns were supposed to coincide with happy.
And then the fact that this place clearly isn't happy.
Right.
It's the opposite of what it is.
This is unhaps.
It makes sense, the help wanted sign, because Teresa's gone. They need help.
Mm-hmm.
They need a waitress.
Yep, nice little detail. So,
I think the next scene is Dave's favorite, if I'm remembering
this
correctly.
This scene is probably perfect.
It's called This One's Coming from J. Edgar.
It's about 6 minutes of just two men being men.
Yeah. Yep.
Duking it out. This is Chet Desmond wants to take Teresa Banks' body, but Sheriff Cable doesn't want to let him have her, so he figures the best way is to settle it by fisticuffs.
By men.
By catching hands.
So just like men.
So he does his famous move of getting a steel bar and giving it a nice bend. Very intimidating.
Also, this guy, his face. I don't like it.
It needs to get hit. I'm so glad that punched. It does multiple times.
Like, you know, you hear, you know, a punchable face. This is a punchable face. And it gets punched.
And it gets punched. Satisfying.
No offense to the actor.
No, he does a great job selling his character. Yeah. His performance makes me want to get the guy punched. I'm sure he's perfectly pleasant in person. But this character needs to get rock'em sock'em'd. But yeah, it's just Chris Isaac and this guy just wailing on each other. And it takes a while, but he eventually puts him down.
It takes a while, and then you get the weird versions of Andy and Lucy just watching and getting just more and more disgusted as it goes on that their guy is losing.
Anti and Tidy?
Yeah.
Heidi?
Wait, that's two Heidis.
Anti and Tidy? Tidy was what I said.
Tidy?
Tidy. Oh.
Tidy is her name?
Andy and Lucy, Anti and Tidy.
Weird names.
Yeah.
Well, that's ones I give them.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the scene goes a little long, but that's not to be expected.
Yep.
Chris Isaac bests the sheriff and finally gets him on the ground, says, "This one's coming from J. Edgar."
Chris Isaac, you mean?
And then he walks off.
Chet Desmond, yeah.
While his theme song plays.
Desmond?
I wish Wicked Game would have kicked in as he bent his own piece of steel in front of him.
Probably would have if David Lynch like literally didn't just use it in his movie a year or two before this.
Well, then he's got the rights. Why wouldn't you pop it in there?
Yeah.
Tyler, what's this next scene?
Cooper and some lady.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's her name?
Diane. I thought for a second.
You're gonna get a glimpse.
I was gonna get a glimpse. And then I'd be like, yeah, I see why this was cut from the movie.
Right.
Because you showed who she was.
You got to keep that air of mystery.
Yeah. But.
Got to keep those mysteries.
Didn't see her.
Life is full of mysteries, as Laura says in Firewalk.
And so I'm still left wondering.
I like that you can kind of infer what Diane is
who the hell
doing
is Diane?
In this office. Just sitting at a desk, looking at Cooper as he rambles on, just like.
Mm hmm. Okay.
More of this?
Yeah, I think there might be a bit of, and I could be just reading it wrong, I think there might be a bit of a meta commentary going on here with Coop's dialogue, too, with there being just a subtle change, kind of, you know, or like there's just, things are a little different, kind of like Fire Walk With Me is a little different than Twin Peaks, you know, it's like, oh, you've changed something.
Mm-hmm.
What have you changed?
Yeah, it could be a little bit
some
of that.
Some things.
I like that the conversation stays one-sided. Like, she's not responding.
Yeah. You don't hear anything.
He is always talking at her. But
Well, maybe she's not there. Maybe his tape recorder's on the ground.
It's a really fun scene. It only takes a minute. And it's just like...
Yeah, because I was trying to think. Actually, you know what? I think I read in the fan... Because there's a fan edit floating around of... the Fire Walk With Me with the missing pieces edited in.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this isn't a Lynch-approved cut of the movie. It's just a fan edit.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen it, but I feel like I read that this scene was the only scene that's not in it because they couldn't figure out where to put it.
I would have opened with it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, you could have fit it somewhere. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I saw somewhere.
It could have been the post-credit
about this
scene.
Yeah, that could have been the post-credit scene.
I think it could have been right before he goes into Cole's office. Like he just suddenly remembers what day it is. Like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Wow, we figured that out in 3 seconds.
Yeah, we are better than the editor of that, if that's true. Do we need to say anything else about the Stanley's apartment scene?
It says Sam asks.
Sam is so interested in the blue rose. He just has to know. What that means. He's like the audience that just has to know everything. What is it? Tell me.
He's a Negro beaver, and that. I think this is what would make Cooper say, don't give this to Sam.
Absolutely.
I don't want that guy on this.
Guy doesn't even know what the blue rose is.
You know, Albert wasn't asking.
I feel like we did need the next scene. I feel like this should have been there.
I love the next scene.
For one,
beautifully shot.
What a waste of production value. to not include this. It's Philip Jeffries. I was going to say Jeff Jeffries.
Jeff.
It's Philip Jeffries in Buenos Aires.
Jeff Jeffries.
Trying to check into this hotel.
Is that in Washington?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm just checking. This scene is wonderful. Someone, I don't know if you want me to point it out, there's just a little goof that someone pointed out that I can't just not see it when I see this scene now, though, at least the opening shot. I don't know if you want me to tell you what
it is. Yeah, tell me right now. I'm looking at it.
So when it cuts over to where Jeffries is about to walk out, for like 10 seconds, you can see his red shoes standing in that little, like they're pointing out. And they're just there for like 10 seconds. And then he starts walking.
Oh, really? Hold on.
So he's like waiting for his cue. And you just see the
two. Oh, yeah.
You just see little red. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't unsee it. What a great scene. So yeah, he's checking in. It's the Palm Deluxe Hotel. I don't know if we want to talk about when do we think this is.
Well, I have to assume that it's sometime during his, I feel like he had to be disappeared already, or like he had to be just kind of off the grid.
Yeah. Working. Cole says he's been gone for 2 years. So, I mean, I don't know if this is,
I feel like this is somewhere within those 2 years when he disappears may take place longer while he's there than is shown to us. But he comes back at the same time that he left.
Right.
Or reappears at the same time that he left. And
yeah.
So there may be some time dilation there during his actual being gone. But I feel like him here at this hotel is part of his 2 year hiatus. And I could be crazy.
No, I like that. I mean
I feel like
you just have, this is the kind of stuff you have to think about given with the information you've been given.
If I wanted to disappear for a little bit, I'd probably pop down to Argentina.
Absolutely.
It looks beautiful.
Not Buenos Aires, Washington.
I don't think it's Buenos Aires, Washington.
So I want to talk about what gets said here. When he's checking in, he asks if there's a Judy saying there. We've heard
Miss
this
Judy.
Come
Thank
up from
you,
him.
Thank you, Judy.
The most interesting part is the guy is like, oh, the young lady left this for you. He doesn't say that it's Judy, though. He just says the young lady's left this for you. And he takes
this also plays into why I think that this is part of him being gone 2 years. So he's looking for a Miss Judy. And we don't know who this is, but apparently whatever tie she has to whatever he's out here doing is traumatizing after he goes to the convenience store. So I feel like he is following the lead.
Which I feel like that happens while he's here.
So I feel like he's following a lead that has led him to this location, and he feels like he's supposed to meet with a Judy. At this place, but maybe
Judy.
It's actually a trap.
Right. I think that very well could be a trap, yeah.
That's why I think he's been gone for 2 years working on something top secret, like won't even let his superiors know about where he is.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, maybe it's just too dangerous or whatever it is.
That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe this one goes above the system.
With Project Blue Book, and these are Blue Rose cases. I feel like they
look,
are
if,
just...
if you're the Power Rangers, and Goldor's destroying the city, Goldar, and Goldar's destroying the city, you don't run to the cops and say, hey, is it cool if we Megazord up and take this thing down? You just go do it.
Sure.
They want you to follow the rules and get permission.
Right. But I'm saying Philip Jeffries right now, David Bowie, is the Megazord.
Is Wyndham Earle and Major Briggs and Philip Jeffries, are
they're
they
Blue Bookers?
Project Blue
they're
Book.
Blue Rosers.
Well, we don't. I think they're separate things. I think Blue Rose is separate from Blue Book. It is. It definitely is.
No. How? How do you know?
Because
that?
They specifically say there's Blue Rose cases and there's Project Blue Book stuff. They don't know about each other. If Cole and Desmond and Cooper are working on Blue Rose cases, and Jeffries are working on Blue Rose cases, because Garland Briggs, Wyndham Earle,
wouldn't he know Wyndham Earle?
You don't know that the Blue Book doesn't have Blue Rose cases in it.
And I feel like Cooper, I think Cooper and Wyndham Earle
pressed
were partners before Cooper was plucked to me on Blue Rose Case. Wendell Merle wasn't good enough.
Nah, Earl does not cut the gravy.
He does not cut the gravy. Let's take a trip to the convenience store.
I would rather not.
I mean, so as I said before, I'm just baffled that one, the spirits have a meeting and nothing seems to get done. Like, what are the minutes? What does the schedule look like for these things?
Remember, there's no time.
It really seems like they're all just kind of doing their own thing.
You don't know.
But let's not forget, like, Bob's only line in this scene is, "I have the fury of my own momentum." That dude is a loose cannon.
And that's great. But everybody is just chilling and doing their own thing. Bob is vibing. The jumping man is not even jumping. He's just kind of waving. I'm pretty sure Tremont and the Grand Center are asleep. There's two homeless guys, and one starts a fire, and nobody cares. This isn't a meeting. This is a time bomb. And it's really, it's mostly 4 minutes of disconnected and obscure one-sentence statements.
I don't think we mentioned either last week, at least with Miss Tremond, Miss Chalfont. The boy is given a name in the credits, too, and that is Pierre.
Pierre.
But I will always refer to him as Creamed Corn Boy.
He is forever Creamed Corn Boy. What is his foot propped up on?
One thing I never really noticed, but I've seen it pointed out several times, is that there's a hole cut in the green table, which people like to theorize that that's where the ring came from, because they're like, green is its color.
It is a formica table for sure.
Also referred to as the Jade Ring.
Oh. And this one guy who's just like holding a broom, and I feel like he doesn't even know where he's at.
Animal life.
Got this just like patchy beard. He tried to shave, but he didn't have a mirror. I get that these guys are operating on a plane that we aren't touching. I can buy that.
Jeffries is touching it.
It's part of a whole, and I know that, but we don't have the information that we need to make these things connect right now. And it's just, I mean, I assume, Pat, I don't know, does this
right now
clear up at all later?
I'm not going to say anything.
You're not going to say anything. All right, well.
He's just telling us that they descended from pure air. They came from pure air.
Yep.
Exactly. Pierre.
Pierre?
Pierre was named after where they descended from. Pure air. Look at that connection we just made. Boom.
Pure air?
But I think they talk about their sort of contract, to, you know, I mean, with this ring, I thee wed. Mm-hmm. Or ring speak, if you will.
And I'm sorry that I'm so jammed up about it, but it's just like, it's such...
You're fine to be jammed up about this. I don't know why you wouldn't
mess.
Be.
It's
such a mess. It is a mess. I don't know how to explain
like we've
it.
Got,
I can't
we've got the view of the cream corn again, and this is Garmin Bogia, which is pain and sorrow, and that's kind of the form it takes when they want to eat it. But man, it's weird. And
it is weird.
Don't get me, I love it. I love the spirit stuff. I love the like Red Room world. And everything that has to do with all the mystery of the series.
It's just so confusing.
I love it. It's just so confusing. And I have no context for this. So that I guess that's where I've got to leave it. I have nothing to say other than this is just bananas. It's so wild that this scene exists.
Yep. Is it weirder seeing it in this context or the way it's presented in Firewalk With Me?
I mean, okay, so in the movie, it makes more sense. Because he is talking about the things that he saw. And it's kind of his disconnected memory of the events. But we see here that those
which would make sense that he wouldn't remember everything that he heard.
Right, yeah, you miss pieces because it's...
Yeah, so you're getting bits and pieces of information.
It happens in a flash. There's so much to take in. There's so much stimulus here.
Yeah.
That you would only be able to recall little things like what we got in the movie. When it's presented here as its own scene... It's like, this is just how the meeting is.
Yeah.
Everybody shows up, takes a seat, and does some weird shit. And that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the lodge meeting.
Grab a broom.
That room needs some sweeping.
I feel like somebody did try to organize this. Like, they got everybody in, and they sat them down and started, like, trying to take roll. And just, it was a lost cause. It's like, all right, jumping man. Electricity. This again?
I could have gone my whole life without that, and been super thrilled.
Let's talk about this next scene. I'm gonna say a lot about this, and some of it is gonna reference the version from Firewalk With Me.
I think it should.
It might be a little jumpy back and forth. Jumping man. So this right here is one of my favorite scenes in all of Twin Peaks. On the outside, it can appear that, you know, it could easily be the most insignificant scene ever. There's some stuff that's said that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
I think it can be studied and broken down in a million different ways. You know, or we could just say infinity. I'd like to just say infinity.
Say it.
So the first thing I want to touch on is Cooper.
Yeah.
And this, some of this involves the stuff from the last, from the or from Firewalk mm-hmm. with Me and not right here. He says he's worried today because of a dream that he told Gordon Cole about. And I believe that dream is what he's about to experience with Jeffrey's coming here. I think that's what he dreamed. Mm. And I will elaborate on that. So you'll notice, you know, because when Jeffrey's walks in and he starts talking, Cooper kind of looks frightened and looks at Gordon and he just yells, "Gordon?" Mm-hmm. And Gordon's like, "I know, Coop," as in like, "Yeah, I know. This is what you told me about."
Yeah.
You know, it's your dream. It's playing out. And then like when Cooper's watching the monitors, like the live playback, he sees himself still in the hallway with Jeffries walking by, which we know that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm almost one.
Did it not?
No, he was, every time we saw it, he was just standing there looking. We never saw the, you know, like Jeffries. So it's like, I almost wonder if either he's getting a message almost like from the doppelganger, or like seeing his shadow self, you know, if that's what that represents. 'Cause like, why is that happening? Mm-hmm. You know? And it may only be happening in the monitor. Like it might, you know, it's like, 'cause I'm just thinking more with the electricity. Just, we know that Jeffries has been at least involved with some lodge stuff now. Mm-hmm. That could be why that's happening.
I feel like Jeffries is caught in a sort of corkscrew of time where he's kind of on a ride he can't control. It's like he doesn't know where the bus stops.
Yeah, it's just,
and lets him off.
I just think it's interesting that it just shows Cooper in two places at once. Because then it just reminds me of him and his doppelganger.
Yeah, because as quickly as he's here, as Jeffries is here, he's suddenly gone.
Right. Yeah.
And I guess with all the budget that they spent on that lodge scene with all the pyrotechnics, that they didn't have
an
effect
there
to fade him out, because he just is gone. They just cut away and cut back and he's not there. And that's how he disappears.
And I want to talk about a little bit about Jeffries here, because I truly do think he's doing some sort of time traveling based on the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Cole calls him the long-lost Philip Jeffries, mm-hmm. says he's been gone for 2 years. He comes out of an elevator and disappears by a phone. So I think he's doing some sort of travel via the electricity. If the phone thing is true, you know, it could be something sort of like The Matrix. I realize it's before The Matrix, and that's also not time traveling, but you know what I mean? Like, you answer the phone and you're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something sort of like that. Or maybe, because he mentions the ring, and I know he's not wearing the ring, but he clearly knows about it, unless he's just talking about the phone, because he's like, ring, the ring. Because he disappears, Chet disappears when he finds the ring. So he's not wearing it, but he's aware of it.
Doesn't he leave the ring, like, the ring stays behind?
You talking about Chet, or?
Chet, yeah.
I mean, the last shot we see of it, he's picking it up, and it just freezes and fades. Mm-hmm. Right before this.
Oh, was it not there? Like,
it was sitting there on the mound of dirt. But no, it was not there when they go back to it.
Yeah.
No.
I feel like it's kind of like the One Ring in the Fellowship of the Ring. When if you put it on or if you make contact with it, then you slip into another dimension. So,
oh my.
If you have it, then you maybe not instantaneously, but if there's just the right time or situation that you slip out. Slip away.
I bet. If I went to Middle Earth and got lost in the mines of Moria, I would stumble upon the ring.
Okay, nerd.
Moira Kelly? You know, and he says, too, he's confused by the date and time. He's, like, looking at the calendar before he disappears, which I don't know if that's what triggers him disappearing. But this is not the first time someone in the series has been confused about the time. Does anybody remember? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but.
Tool time.
When it's not the first time someone's been disoriented about what time, like the time and place that they are in.
Nadine.
Well, there is that, but that's not.
Nailed it.
I'm thinking of Major Briggs when he comes back from what we assume is going to the White Lodge. What he says, because he comes back and he's wearing like World War II gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's right.
I just made a connection there. One of my other favorite theories about this scene is that is Jeffrey's experiencing this entire thing opposite of everyone else, aka backwards. Mm-hmm. When he walks into the room with the other Blue Rosers, the baseball team, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Philadelphia Blue Rosers.
Yes.
I don't sports.
Spoke the Buenos Aires
Blue Rosers.
Washington Blue Rosers.
No, but think about it. So think about, I mean, think about the dialogue backwards. He looks at the phone. He's muttering about a ring. Telephone ringing, maybe. That's how he teleported. Maybe that's how he got here. Mm-hmm. He immediately starts saying that he found something in Seattle at Judy's. There they were. And then there they were. Mm. They sat quietly for hours. I followed them. It was a dream. You live inside a dream. Then he says to Gordon, listen carefully. I've been to one of their meetings above the convenience store. I want to tell you everything, but I don't have a lot to go on. But I'll tell you one little itty-bitty thing. Judy's positive about this. He moves backwards to see Cooper. Who do you think this is there? We're not going to talk about Judy. We're not going to talk about Judy at all. He immediately stops talking about Judy when he sees Cooper. And even when he kind of walks into the room, it almost looks like he's stumbling a little, or he could be like walking backwards.
Oh, I thought he had to pee.
Could be that, but you know, he says that, so maybe he assumes Coop is Boop because of his time travels, and he doesn't want Cooper to know about Judy. Something to think about.
Who's Judy?
So this, we need to talk about Judy.
Did you get, I mean, did you, does any of that, like, I love that theory.
Yeah, that actually does track. So I like the idea that he's walking so strangely. It's kind of like a newborn deer. So it kind of to me felt like maybe he's just disoriented from.
Well, yeah, because, yeah, he is there, but then when he's like walking down the hallways, he's fine.
Yeah. So it's like part of it is almost like he's disoriented from the travel, but. Yeah, like you said, he walks down the hall just fine. He comes out of the elevator confidently, and it takes him a second to, like, when he starts rambling, then he gets kind of wobbly-legged. And it's almost like he was directed to walk as though he was being shot in reverse. But,
yeah,
but front ways.
Right.
Make it look like you're being told in reverse.
You're walking backwards.
It just wouldn't be that unusual with the backwards stuff that happens here anyway in the show.
Yeah.
Or in the series.
Like, yeah, I always knew there was something just kind of odd about how he was walking, but I never thought of it quite like that, and I really like it a lot.
Speaking of Jeffries, I regret we didn't do this last week, but there are two Phillips now. Another double.
Yep.
Philip Jeffries and Philip Gerard.
Wow.
So I true, and on this topic, I really do think that time just is non-linear. It does not exist when it comes to the Lodge stuff. And we talked about this in the last episode, and I think it's true here about Jeffries. And we might even be able to apply this a little loosely, because the Mike scene from Fire Walk With Me is confusing as hell. And maybe we can apply it there, where maybe he's experiencing some sort of time out of order too, because otherwise he's just fucking with Cooper in the series. Like, you know, I'm not trying to get another rant about that scene. I just think it's something interesting to think about. And this shit right here is why I love Twin Peaks. We can talk about these theories all day long. It's so, it makes my mind just spin.
Yeah, me too.
The world spins.
Indeed.
So anyway, this scene, it's one of my, I don't know if I can say it's my all-time favorite scene. We can wait till we're done with the return. But like, this is a scene that I'll just think about from time to time, and I'm just like, what did that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Who's Judy?
Who is Judy?
Yeah, I said it before. That's, we need to talk about Judy.
It's the new Diane.
We need to talk about Judy.
Judy was mentioned in the series, but not Judy by itself. Major Garland Briggs said the name when he asked something about Judy Garland when he was like out of sorts sitting in the sheriff's station. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, he's like, Judy Garland?
Yeah.
Yes, Judy Garland Briggs.
I don't think so. But yeah, Judy was mentioned before. I feel like...
That's the only time I believe.
And my only...
Prior to this.
My only theory on this is that Judy is another one of the spirits. And a... And in sort of a Carmen Sandiego style, it moves around a lot and it has to be tracked down. And I think that's what Philip Jeffries was working on, but couldn't pin her down. And I feel like she leaves traps and she's dangerous. But what and who she is? I'm a blank. I'm blank as a fart.
I'll never tell.
Yeah, heard that one before.
I bet you have.
Anything else on this scene? I know I had a lot prepared to say about this because I love the scene so much. I don't know if you guys had anything else to touch on with it.
I feel like when he was talking to Coop, like,
who do you think that
do you
is?
Know
there?
Who this is, or I feel like I immediately picked up on that.
Yeah,
like being,
yeah, the not the Coop that was left behind.
Right, not that that person was, but I understood what he meant.
As much as I love this scene, I've got beef.
Whoa,
shit! I was not prepared for that.
I got beef. Oh man. So yeah, and I'm surprised you guys didn't pick up on it. If you did, I totally don't mind cutting this out, and you guys can talk about it. Jeffrey's at the end of this scene when he realizes what time it was and the lights are flicking.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey's says, he looks at the calendar and he says, February 1989. That right there doesn't go along with the time period that this takes place in the movie. This would take place in February 1988 in the movie, because it would be a year prior to Laura Palmer's death.
I am going to flip this desk. You know, it hadn't even occurred to me.
What? Wait. This happens after the series?
It does after here, and I can see, not after the series, it happens before, it happens weeks before the series, because Cooper goes to Twin Peaks at the end of February of 89. But...
Oh, wait. What did you say was 88?
When Teresa Banks died. And when Chet Desmond went missing.
So did Philip Jeffrey pop back a year after he disappeared?
I'm still... Hang on. So, Chet Desmond disappeared. That line doesn't get mentioned here at all. It was recorded after the fact by Albert. You never see Albert say it in Fire Walk With Me. It was 80 yards into the movie. It wasn't shot or filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And this was cut, which I would assume because the date was wrong. I could be wrong, but that's just
maybe they
thought.
Caught their
either
own
way.
Flab
the fact that it is the fact that it is said and makes me more confused
totally
is why
right.
I have. And yeah, and you're right. It may be right, but either way, the fact that it is wrong in conjunction to what takes place in the movie is the reason why I have B.
I see. And he left.
And oh, he's bowing out.
Oh, he bowed.
I'm signing off. Dave Todd, good luck with the rest of the series. The scene was enough for me.
Great.
And he retires.
We will end it there. Missing Pieces Part 2 coming up
next week.
If we missed any pieces from the Missing Pieces, let us know what we should have covered at talkingbackwardspod@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Instagram at Talking Backwards Pod there as well. Patrick.
You can hit us up on Twitter at Talking Backward.
Tyler.
Anchor.fm/Talking Backwards.
So Jeffries gets teleported back, and the bellhop who carried his bags
is a little startled.
He's a little bit startled. So much so that he
sure
lets Jeffries know that the shit has come out of his ass.
Are we doing that?
And that is my damn fine line of the night.
Damn fine.
And that's a wrap. Talking Backwards is an independently produced program. If you would like to help support us and join our community of patrons, you can do so through our Patreon page at patreon.com/talkingbackwards. There you can find ways to not only help us grow the show, but also get access to exclusive merch, live streams, behind-the-scenes content, and even early access to upcoming episodes. That's patreon.com/talkingbackwards. We hope to see you in the future. Or is it past?